G'day guys, welcome to this week's Hash It Out, the first of 2023. Once again, joined by Armenio and Noah. How are we, gentlemen?
Doing good.
Happy New Year, doing well.
Thank you very much. I hope you had a nice, safe and prosperous sort of holiday season. And here we are, straight back into things. And obviously with crypto, once again, there's never a dull moment. We sort of saw what happened in 2022, the fallout of sort of entities over-leveraging and everything. Just that complete shit fight, basically. And let's sort of talk about what we want to see moving forward in 2023 and even possibly a little bit beyond for the entire industry. So let's hash that out.
All right, where to start?
Yeah, where to begin?
I hope that moving into 2023, people start to realize more that things are more PvP as well as P2P, right? Player versus player. Versus peer-to-peer, because both of them happen simultaneously, right? And starting from first assumptions, it's important that people that move into crypto as a whole kind of understand that. There's a lot of, let's say, important assumptions and ideas that you can build on, with that in mind to try to protect yourself, right? And, you know, the first and most important thing always has to do with protecting your keys, right? Your keys are, you have to look at that as a PvP thing. You have to keep it safe because if you don't, your coins are gone, right?
Yeah, I saw today one of the Bitcoin core developers had a bunch of his Bitcoin hacked somehow. Like, I don't really know what happened there, but that's just sort of reinforces what you're saying. Like, you got to keep your keys really safe.
Yeah, and I guess that goes to show that sort of someone who's been in the space for such a long time, it can happen to anyone. A little slip up, someone could visually see your seed phrase, for instance, or you can get caught out putting something, some information into something that's a little bit sketchy or whatnot.
Back to the computer, even, you know. You have $3 million sitting on your computer. That's a pretty nice incentive for somebody to
a simple keylogger. Yeah, I remember a while back there was some exploits possible on Macs where people could remote access your computer and drain wallets. Mm-hmm. And I know someone that happened to. And, you got to be careful. People are, if there's money to be made, there's bad actors out there. So got to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, Joe, you mentioned PvP. That's a pretty cool term, actually. The player versus player. A lot of people sort of don't think about that perspective as well. Obviously, with trading and things like that, that's always, say, myself versus yourself. You want to take a financial gain, and I want to do the same. But ultimately, someone has to lose on a trade, and one pays for the other's sort of experience, if you want to put it that way. Yeah, it's an interesting term to actually sort of make people think PvP.
Yeah, and you take it to like, okay, what's the next assumption you might want to do if you're doing just high-level research? Emissions, right? Yep. You have some, projects where you have a lot of pre-allocation, really heavy inflation. What does that do in a PvP environment? You kind of have to make some assumptions based on how coins are printed, so to speak. In proof of work, okay, you can say that early miners usually have some kind of advantage, but as well, if you hop onto what to mine, there's a ton of proof of work coins that come out that may never go anywhere, right? They may never even land on an exchange that you or I have ever even heard of. And so there's a certain risk that miners are taking. Mining a coin that may not even be on an exchange. And then if they are, there might be very little liquidity. So there's always a certain risk reward trade-off that people need to keep in mind. When you have, let's say, pre-mined allocations and, a lot of the times it kind of leads to people getting dumped on. No other way to put it. That's not a PvP battle that you want to have if you're trying to be conservative in many cases, because it's a game where you have a big disadvantage potentially.
The pre-allocations, obviously you're fighting against whoever that allocation was allocated to. Saying that a couple of more times. But yeah, ultimately we see a number of sort of, especially the VC chains where the token distribution, it's heavily weighted to the team or VCs, seed investors, et cetera, et cetera. And ultimately people who do come in a little bit later, whether it's through like a proof of stake protocol sort of side of it or mining or just simply investing. Yeah, you're competing heavily against an allotment that's sitting there sort of waiting to cash out.
Yeah, I mean, even the, like, I know Algorand, I think their foundation, they're, like, of all of the coins that are staked, it's, like, 40% is by, like, 40% of block rewards go to the foundation or something like that. And, you know, that's a little bit fucked.
Yeah,
that's, well, yeah, you need to know your assumptions in a PvP environment because, you know, I think some people, they read a good marketing thing or something on Twitter or Reddit or wherever, you know, people are pulling information from. And they're not really approaching this as though it is a, okay, let's look at gambling as a basis for the thesis of PvP, right? You go to a poker table, you know, if somebody's got a wild card, you might not want to sit there, right?
Yeah, it's thinking about the Algorand sort of side of it. I was doing a fair bit of research. This is going back a long time, probably a couple of years ago now. It's always sort of been a contentious issue as well with the foundation having a large allocation there and the vesting periods and all kinds of things. I guess that's another point to think about is doing from like a fundamental analysis sort of point of view, what's this the vesting period for team allocations and all kinds of things like that as well, because knowing that could even put you as an investor at an advantage sort of getting out before those the vesting period is unlocked.
Potentially. Even outside of an investment standpoint, it should raise some flags in your brain, like, what is the real intention of this project? Why is so much of it allocated in the way that it is? Is this really some altruistic technological thing, or is this some people trying to pump their bags a little bit, you know? And maybe it's both. A lot of the time, I think it tends to be both. On an unrelated note, Joe, I remember on Twitter you were talking about this PvP thing, and I think it's a very good way of thinking about it. And I think you also mentioned PvP in the sense of like person versus protocol.
Mm-hmm. That's when you get to whales, right? Like it wouldn't even in Bitcoin. Like let's say you look at something like Bitcoin's fair launch, you know, started from Genesis. You know, you have some people who basically are market makers. They have the ability to, you know, dump through periods of resistance and accumulate. And, you know, that is a totally different mentality in a way, because you're not really trading, let's say, price. A lot of the time you are trading versus player. Mm-hmm. Like you're hunting leveraged positions. You're, let's say, trying to liquidate people, clean up, or... you know, at that point, it's more of like looking at it in terms of expansion and consolidation of actual percentage, you know, of token rather than just profit.
Yeah, basically trading volume instead of price in that respect, where you are potentially chasing the liquidations, both sort of, bullish and bearish sort of side of it as well, because... having that ability to liquidate markets, obviously you're going to have a large volume there to be able to sort of shift markets as well.
Yeah, it's one thing that I don't like about the current state of DeFi. Very unpopular to say, probably. But, you know, being that there is no threshold where, let's say, power is kind of capped. Like if I'm a whale going into DeFi and I have like unlimited purchasing power and there's no conservative restraints around that, a lot of protocols get exploited. You know, we've seen that for the last 2 years where, you know, whether it's like governance wars or Oracle manipulation or all kinds of fun stuff. You know, for the average user, you do not have the ability to trade against a protocol like that. You just don't.
No.
And so it gives a very select few, let's say, you know, unlimited minting power in certain protocols, and that's been catastrophic.
Yeah, most of the time the deck has been very stacked against small retail investors. Yes. Like extremely stacked with between the whales, between allocations, between exploits. You know, it's like
well, it's not what I'm here for, is the bottom line. That's why I really hope that moving into 2023 people start making that assumption. You know, what is a fair game, right? That doesn't mean you're gonna win every time, right? But at least if we have, you know, clear assumptions that we can make in certain DeFi protocols, you have a fair game. That's what I like about proof of work, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, more than anything, is every block it's a fair game.
Yep,
fair lottery, so to speak.
And I'm pretty excited for DeFi to sort of start blossoming on Ergo in 2023. We've got a lot of projects sort of just like kind of finalizing, mm-hmm. or some are like Sigma Loans is sort of just popped up recently. We've got Axel doing their peer-to-peer loans. I was actually just testing some of that stuff earlier tonight. We've got lending pools, we've got
duck pools,
yeah,
and then simple things like erg flip.
And the nice part about I think all the ones that I mentioned, they're all open source, and so you know what the deck looks like.
Yeah, it's a fair game, right? That's the ideal situation in DeFi, in my opinion, is that it's open and accessible to anybody. It has probably some threshold where, you know, power is not abused, which in DeFi, that's been one of the primary failures that we've seen. Now, I understand it, right? It's like, okay, how do you bootstrap as much liquidity and TVL as possible if you don't do that? Right, suddenly things are going to probably be a little bit slower, a little bit more organic. Maybe that's a good thing, right? Not as sexy, but stable.
Yeah, and
right now is not the time to try to be sexy anyway. Yeah, you could be the sexiest thing on earth, and nobody would give a fuck right now. So.
But just in regards with the DeFi side of it. Once again, it kind of goes back to that first principles. What's crypto here for? Is it sort of changing financial systems and frameworks and things like that? Or is it just simply value extraction? So I hope we go to the latter on that one. Sort of the former on that one.
Edit that one out.
Just got to get my head back in the game.
Oh, man. That's funny.
Yeah.
I know what you meant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So hopefully we get back to the point where we're actually utilizing these protocols for what they're intended. Obviously, changing financial systems and everything, getting back on track of what sort of crypto is all about, not just simply extracting value for US dollars, but yeah, changing people's lives.
No, the biggest value of cryptocurrencies, in my opinion, is the ability to disintermediate parties, which is a huge carrying cost in business, right?
Yeah,
like that is actually a big efficiency gain that, you know, not only let's say could create fairer systems, but also remove a lot of fingers from pies. And the second is to try to democratize things to where at least it's a fair game.
Yeah,
now, there's a lot of things in crypto where I look at it and I'm like, you know, that does not look to me like a fair game.
And I think It's probably fair to say anyway, a lot of people have been burnt throughout this last cycle. And hopefully people sort of look at things from sort of the discussion that we're having today, looking at the fundamentals, looking at the team allocations, the tokenomics, who's behind the projects, everything like that. Like, is a protocol simply open source or not? Has someone reviewed it, whether it's a core member or just a community dev or something along those lines, ultimately sort of trying to instill trust into the community that these protocols are here for the right reasons. And ultimately, once again, sort of that risk reward scenario where people do want to sort of get in and out and utilize the protocols for the intended use.
Yeah, I'm not a complete idiot. I don't think degeneracy is going to disappear, right?
Yeah.
I would just like to see more clear assumptions in terms of risk, right? Yeah. Because there will always be high risk assets or high risk trades, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about, you know, crypto or penny stocks, right?
Yeah.
You know, even you could look at real estate. I'm sure there's some speculative type of investments people could make, or, you know, whatever market. So I don't think that that's going to go away. And the reality is, if people want to play with that, let them. But, you know, having transparent risk assumptions that don't deceive people.
Yeah.
I think is important. And, you know, even if you take it outside of cryptocurrency, you could look at penny stocks, right? There's a ton of shitty newsletters and deception out there, just in terms of
YouTubers and
all of that. It's not a unique problem just to crypto. In real estate, I imagine you have the same highly speculative, highly sexy and marketed schemes, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that risk threshold is going to like disappear and people are suddenly going to be a lot more conservative. It's just to be transparent.
Yeah, I think it's everywhere. Any kind of asset class, even in trading cards and collectibles, like there's always going to be that element to it.
Yeah, most definitely. I guess having those clear assumptions, once again, instead of having like a 500 page terms of service thing that no one's going to read, they're just going to click through it, have just a couple of simple dot points or something, I guess, like obviously trying to convey as much information as possible, but yeah, having everything compressed, and then if they want to expand things, let them dive deeper. But there's always going to be that degeneracy, but hopefully, my hope anyway for 2023, we see a little bit less of that. But obviously, it's, once again, it's always going to be around.
Yeah, I hope, but my actual expectations are a little low in that department, sadly. If I'm honest.
Yeah. So looking forward into 2023, what do we want to see sort of happen to the industry as a whole? Like, obviously we sort of touched on some tokenomics and assumptions and things like that. What do we want to see sort of moving forward for this year, I guess?
No, in terms of Ergo, I think the open source code and a lot of unique frameworks that start to build a more robust financial system, right? And, you know, whether it's, duck pools, Dexy, and potentially even Rosen bringing in, assets that are outside of the Ergo ecosystem and potentially having projects that are building on Ergo be able to expand and become multi-chain. It's big.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, I would like to see hopefully Ergo can provide, you know, the world is in a tough financial spot right now. And in the manifesto, the Ergo manifesto, sort of the original idea of Ergo was to provide real value and financial utility to people that are in hard economic times.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we can see some of that come to life this year in a more meaningful way.
Yeah.
Rather than the degen playground that we have been talking about.
Yeah.
when you are listing a number of projects just previously that are sort of finalizing, and you did mention Excel that you're doing some testing with, and seeing things that are actually happening on the ground, like in Kenya with through that protocol itself. That's what I love to see, changing people's lives. You see that the loan requests come in, you see where that money's actually gone to, how it's benefited not only the receiver of the loan, but the community as a whole. That's what I absolutely love seeing those stories and hearing about them and following up with those stories as well. Hopefully we see a lot more of that come to life.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see, real quick, it'd be cool to see the co-op in Kenya sort of get them in touch with the raffle as well. I feel like that could be a cool opportunity. But Joe, what were you going to say?
The biggest bottleneck there is always ramping.
Yeah.
That's always the most inefficient part of the process. So, you know, that's actually quite a hard issue to solve, because you kind of have to have a foot in both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, foot in the crypto world, a foot in, you know, some existing financial infrastructure. Hopefully in 2023, you know, even outside of Ergo, I'd love to see better ramping. That way, you know, actual decentralized finance could get a lot more efficient, because that is a choke point right now.
Yeah,
for sure.
In regards to sort of Ergo, I think the ecosystem as a whole is positioned extremely well. Like we've seen the last probably two or even, well, basically since the inception in 2019, but the last couple of years especially, the development has been sort of gone exponentially. And we're at the stage now where we're seeing a number of those frameworks and protocols and projects building on Ergo sort of almost finalizing and coming to fruition there. It'd be awesome to see even like say with Rosen opening up the ecosystem to the broader sort of industry, bringing in a number of sort of different projects from others' chains and having that interoperability and everything as such. That's what I'm sort of excited about, even sort of having that interoperability and then expanding and offering Oracle service once the V2 side have come to light. And yeah, that's one thing I'm really looking forward to and really excited about for the Ergo ecosystem.
Yeah, I would say probably the absolute top of my list is to see what happens with SNPs.
Yeah, well, there's another one.
You know, that's probably, to me, the most interesting technical solution in proof of work in a long time, other than Gitblock. And it's kind of like the next iterative step after Gitblock. So I'm really excited to see what that team is going to do moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concept behind that is extremely exciting. And to see where that ends up, not only for Ergo, but for the entire industry and providing transparency for miners and everything like that, not only for Ergo's consensus mechanism, but basically any miner, proof of work mineable coin. It's really exciting, the innovation that they brought forward.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I was just gonna say, let's see when they, you know, come to the forefront with what they're working on.
Yeah, I know they're kind of after their pool has retired. They're not going anywhere, but it's not totally clear what's next. So I'm very excited to see what they've got up their sleeve. What was I going to say? I lost my thought.
Talking about mining, proof of work.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's still probably not even been 6 months since the merge. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how proof of work continues to consolidate.
Yeah.
Pretty rough timing with how the bear market went. It's like two big downward events sort of combined into one for proof of work.
Yeah, you got to hand it to the Ethereum Foundation. You know, two cycles in a row, they dumped right at the top.
Pretty convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, that's no doubt.
Next time we'll know, right? Well, you're out. Yeah. While I'm away from the dump on everybody.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Well, that's a very good point.
Credit where credit is due. What they pulled off was pretty tough.
No, it is. I mean, that's a technical upgrade. We'll see what happens with, withdrawals and, proto dank sharding, all the other stuff they're working on. I've always said if they succeed, it's good for the industry, right? Mm-hmm. But, for miners, yeah, they kind of rugged that whole subset of users. And, the industry has really shifted away from, I don't know, just the mentality of a fair game, right?
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's the worst part of the crypto industry is that, if you were to go back, let's say around when Bitcoin came out and when there was, different proof of work ideas, there was always a very strong adherence to, we need to make sure there's a fair game. And this day and age, man, there's some sketchy shit. No other way.
Like people don't even want to talk about proof of work anymore. Like now that Ethereum is sort of moved on, it's like, it's so unfashionable to talk about proof of work now.
It's still a fair game, right? You'll never convince me that it's not.
Totally.
Because, in theory, if I mint a token and to start from Genesis and I'm the one staking that token, how do you overcome that advantage? Hopefully over time it decentralizes and da 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 da, but it still starts from an unfair game.
It's the whole purpose stake, like obviously you have to have that token distribution initially, because then that obviously stems to your decentralization. But having the transparency even on the proof of stake side of things, and we saw some of the major chains, even with Solana, there was, I think it was 13% or something like that, that they found in an unallocated or unknown wallet that was doing some market making and shady shit on the back end of stuff. And just coming back to the transparency and things like that, it's just wild to think about.
I mean, those guys basically admitted to dumping on their investors. Like, it was pretty clear.
You could even look at BNB. Is it a blockchain? Some people would say no.
SQL database.
Some people.
there's some issues there in terms of transparency of assets. Yeah. What can I say? If I just look at it and I say, I don't see it as a fair game. Mm-hmm. Move on. Like if people want to speculate and play the game, go for it. I'm not going to stop anybody, but I do think that if we're going to create a real value, it has to be based on that concept of what is fairness, right? In a lot of cases, it is impossible to know. It's like, that's why I'm always say open source code is so important, right? Because if it's not, it's impossible to make that distinction. Is this a fair game?
Not reliant on the trust me bro model, that sort of thing that we kind of mentioned a couple of times. But it's you're looking into a black box. What can you see? Nothing,
and it's created a lot of issues, especially off-chain lending. And we'll see what happens with the Gemini Genesis DCG drama. Same shit, you're going to get a certain percentage or APY return. And, where does it come from? Well, you lend your assets to that guy and he makes riskier bets and he's trying to get 12%, keep 4% for himself, and then pay you back the 8, right? Like if you don't know where the yield comes from, you might just be the yield. We're back to that.
How many times have you said that?
Too many.
Same old shit.
Too many.
We've seen it time and time again. We've discussed it at length on multiple occasions, and this is just the latest iteration of that, isn't it, really?
It's a continuation. Same problem, just they probably could float longer before they sank.
Yeah.
And they probably won't be the last either. You know, it's like,
well, there's some pretty big players that that was all the names that were just thrown around there. So
yeah, in a week we'll see. Next week's episode should be interesting.
What happens in a week?
I believe it is what, the 8th or the 9th that Gemini is supposed to be paying back people that.
So the loans are being called and see what happens.
Yeah. I guess the wild card moving into this next year is probably, you know, all the off-chain, you know, governance regulation side. We'll see. Maybe that lands more squarely on exchanges and we see a fair game. You know, I certainly would say that off-chain there are some infrastructure improvements and rules that could potentially be made to make it a fair, let's say, industry. You know, I think anybody that doesn't make that assumption hasn't been paying attention. You know, in terms of on-chain, that I don't. Well, the bottom line is, if it's a blockchain, it shouldn't matter, right? If it's built properly, it shouldn't matter. It literally should be, you know, P2P finance. And if somebody, a third party wants to come in and can pause the chain or roll it back or influence it in some way, it's not a real blockchain. It's not a decentralized system.
Yep.
So in that case, have fun. You know, we'll see what's real and what's not.
Yeah. Built for resilience, isn't it? That's what it's all about, these financial systems. And being a wild card, that regulation side of things, obviously we've sort of heard rumors here and there from basically the inception of cryptocurrencies and things like that, but regulation's coming. And there's been a lot more chatter now with the ECB and a lot of things happening in the States. And obviously, or here in Australia, there's been a little bit of chatter and things as well, but nothing substantial. Everything that's just speculation now, and people sort of regulating themselves to try and cover for potential regulation and things like that. So
yeah, and it stifles innovation.
Yeah
it's, you know, about, it's like when it's people about are scared to take risks. What was that?
I said it's about as clear as mud.
Oh yeah,
you know, yeah, there's every year, oh, China's gonna ban Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and the US is gonna do this and that, and you know, okay, I've been hearing that same shit on, you know, in this industry since like 2015.
Yeah. So, but you know, it makes it hard to innovate and do things that are pushing the boundary when there's fear of retribution. Oh,
that's true. Absolutely. And then what we get is these quasi, like almost, you don't have profit distribution, so we get a governance token, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even in our own ecosystem with Spectrum having to do KYC, it's like,
yeah, I understand their predicament, right?
Yeah,
man,
and I appreciate that they aren't going to KYC for their platform, but yeah, it's just a bummer that's where we're at. That out of fear of longevity being at stake, it's like that's the route that has to be taken.
You know what? You got to manage your risks.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I always said that you got to manage your risks, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are looking around at their family, their situation, and they're like, maybe I should, you know, cover my ass a little bit if I can. I can't blame them.
Yeah.
I wish it was a different industry, or you know, that type of pressure or fear wasn't there. But if it is, and some people want to, you know, let's just say, hedge their bets, so to speak. Yeah, they got to do what they got to do.
Yep.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, they were stifling that innovation where some people might have amazing ideas and things like that, but they just don't want to pursue them from fear of regulation and sort of being in all that regulation being enforced and things. And like you said, Joe, just a simple thing like a profit distribution. It's so simple in theory about everyone benefiting and things like that, but ultimately if you look at it on paper, it just screams security law.
Yeah maybe one day we'll see Anon Armenio spinning up some
you gotta delete Armenio. This one
Go to the dark side.
This vid's not going to make it to air. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
But
well, then you get into actual like decentralized ownership, right? And that becomes fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what if you can build a on-chain or even potentially in the future an off-chain, you know, portfolio of assets that, you know, pays out based on their performance, right? That's kind of how the traditional financial system works in many ways, right? There's just no transparency.
Mm.
Like, we have the ability to eliminate so much trust in that system, as well as potentially disintermediate some people that are collecting along the way. So I think there's a tremendous amount of value there, and it's very disruptive,
yeah,
potentially. But, you know, and nobody wants to get their toe wet because, you know, it's a
too risky.
Yeah.
Your thinking around that, is that something like an ETF or something like that, or having a basket of goods or commodities or whatever sort of currencies on in crypto and things, and
In a decade, it depends how many assets are actually digitized.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you know, even in traditional markets, there's a ton of, let's see, potential, you know, securities that are bundled in different ways and packaged. You know, you can look at the real estate sector, the commodity sector. You know, the question is, okay, there's not a lot of transparency in the finances of those products themselves, sadly. You know, what if you were to put that on chain to where you get the accountability of blockchain and you get a certain decentralized ownership mechanism, you get trustlessness from smart contracts, it could be a better system. So, you know, in my mind, it's a fair game. What's not to like?
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
How about for 2023, personal goals in this space for you guys?
Personal goals.
We've all got our own sort of different pies. Like, what are y'all hoping to see for ourselves this year?
Myself or yourself, Joe?
Oof.
I'll go first. Me personally. I'd love to see, this is what I would like to see personally happen to the Ergo ecosystem. Everyone just finding their voices and just spreading the word, screaming from the rooftops about all their products and everything like that, because we've got extremely innovative projects going on here. We've mentioned a number. We've got uncollateralized loans with Exel, DuckPool's collateralized loans. We've got SNISPs, a lot of things that are industry first, like even the raffles and even like fun things like Blobstopia and things like that. Seeing the community come together and find their voice and speak about all the cool things that's happening here and screaming from the rooftop about everything that Ergo has to offer. But my personal goal, providing as much information and help that to the ecosystem as I personally can. Obviously how that is gauged and things like that, that's sort of a pretty hard thing to do. But yeah, just provide as much time personally into sort of DMs and things like that. That's what I'd sort of like to allocate a lot of my time to.
Nice. Joe?
Yeah, I would like to overall become less important. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's a great goal. You know, in terms of the EF over time, I would love to see the core protocol be more managed by an association of companies rather than just the Ergo Foundation. I think that is an important shift that we need to look at. In terms of like ecosystem and forward facing stuff, I'd love to sleep in, you know.
Not really, mate.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, external partnerships, it's always a matter of risk mitigation, in my opinion, because, mm-hmm, you know, we came to market, let's say, with a very small allocation relative to how things generally work in this industry. And so we have to be conservative with our spending. You know, I think The Ergo Foundation has done amazing with that in terms of what we've delivered and then what we've actually spent.
I'm not sure if anything was covered in the recaps or anything like that, but on that point itself, you can see some dApps who have raised money through various means and no one in the Ergo ecosystem or anything like that, but external who have gone under. And if you look at what Ergo's actually delivered for the fair value in regards to the price of Ergo and what has been delivered and things like that, it's mind-blowing to see where people are actually blowing their money in dApp development, protocol development, things like that, and to see what has actually been achieved by the core group on the Ergo Foundation, devs, core team, and things like that. It's really amazing to see.
And sadly, our largest expense in the history of the Ergo Foundation is paying exchanges to list Ergo.
Yeah. An open source decentralized protocol.
Yeah, it's open source code. Like usually, you know, we give them money and then we have to teach them how to spin up a node and build a wallet. And we do that for free anyway, right? But
all more to the points that you made, Joe, that's all signs of maturity in the ecosystem as well. And it'd be amazing to see all that sort of come to light.
Yeah. So, you know, I would love to continue to expand markets, but you know, for me, it has to be risk reward, right? You know, you could look at, look at FTX, right? Who wants to drop, well over $1 million to get listed on an exchange and then deal with the exchange requirements in terms of liquidity and then get rugged anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
That's painful. So in a way, we need to really approach it from a perspective that, you know, this may or may not be a healthy relationship anyway. So it's best to mitigate risk.
Yeah, my own goals, just continuing to shine the spotlight on cool projects that people don't know a lot about. I think that's probably my favorite thing to do in our community is try to provide a voice for people that have built really cool stuff but are too humble.
Yeah, you know, that's the funny thing, isn't it? You know, in a way, like one of the biggest downsides to proof of work is that miners are just like they have computers running in their basement or their garage or their warehouse, and they don't need to, you know, like engage, right? Versus you could look at something like where you have stake pools. A lot of the times there's a natural incentive for them to market because it's beneficial for their stake pool to attract stakes. Therefore they naturally are a lot louder than the miners that are like, hey, I'm a miner, so I don't have to deal with this shit. Right?
It's probably why they're mining and not stake pool operators.
But for those who don't know, actually, Noah is one of those people who dives into various GitHubs and finds obscure things from who knows where. And it's someone just making cool shit and bringing it to light. Being behind Sigmaverse, you brought a lot of things to the attention of the Ergo ecosystem, and even just connecting people. Your outreach and talking to different projects and developers and community members and things like that. Like that's what I'd love to see about the growth of the community as well, and love to see more of it. But thanks very much for your service there, mate. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah,
I think that was the second thing I wanted to say, is just continuing to provide resources for people and just sort of be like a connecting force in the community. It doesn't sound like a lot, but I think it goes a longer way than people would expect.
It's big. You have to look inside every blockchain. There's a peer-to-peer network, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the connections that actually make everything work.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. It's like people talk about in real life, how effective networking is. And it's mm-hmm. the same thing. It's like you get like-minded people together and they start forming ideas about cool things to make, or maybe there's some opportunity for a partnership, or, you know, who knows what, like
collaboration and breaking down silos and all kinds of things. It's a really important.
Yeah. So that's my goal. Just kind of keep the ship in the same direction.
Yeah. Don't talk to me about ships. I've had enough.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I think that's a good goal. Like a fair PvP game in a solid P2P community.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And more to your point, it sort of stems, Noah's point, about how humble a lot of people here in Ergo are. And it sort of stems to the point that I was making. People finding their voices and shouting out all the innovation and projects they're making, whether it's a little open source sort of dApp that or tutorial things. We are the development community here in Ergo, even the community members themselves, even some of the investors, everyone's quite humble and happy with the Ergo ecosystem, but bringing that awareness and voice and providing all the content and everything around that, whether it's videos or text or tweets or forum posts, Reddit posts, things like that. That's, it all stems to the voice of Ergo and gets the message out there.
No, I find it a little comical sometimes where you have stuff in this industry that people will be talking about shit for like 2 years and there's no product. And it's still like, well, look at all this marketing and there's no product. And then in the Ergo ecosystem,
it's staking like, portal.
Yeah, it's like, here, hey, look, here's the product. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, cool. You know, and there's not that same energy. I think there's a balance to be had there. I find it a little funny just because the amount of things where people are just beating a drum and then here we are like a year later, 2 years later. Yeah. Nothing out.
Closed gits, the project's collapsed and where's the money gone? Who knows? And then here, little old Ergo is pumping away and everyone's working behind the scenes and pushing out products. And
there it is, open source. Please read it and reuse it and make it better.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a fine balance there because having a development team who isn't outspoken, you need to sort of find that connection. And this is where Noah helps as well. Introducing people who will find that voice and provide the marketing and creating the hype about the product as well. There is the two sides to the product that has to sort of come to light as well. Like, yes, you can release a product, here it is, but who's aware of it? What does it do? Everything like that. That's where we have to make those connections and everything like that as well.
Yeah. All right. You know what? I guess they just have a lot larger marketing budgets than us.
Yeah.
Exactly. I have the price sheets. I mean, I know the costs. If we wanted a front page article on any crypto stuff, that's not like hard. You just need money. And you need to write an article and pay someone, right?
Yeah.
But then I also say, okay, well, we also need, you know, improvements in our base infrastructure, and that costs money. And so, you know, what is actually going to deliver the value long term to where the foundation fulfilled its role to build out the core?
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully over time, the community and projects in the community, you know, jump into that role for marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have fancy names for hard forks and upgrades.
Yeah. Well, like we've just seen the 5.0 thing is quite substantial performance gain and everything there that was being built on or being developed for a number of months or even over a year.
Years.
Yeah. Now we're sort of starting the discussion on 6.0 and everything like that. Obviously, there's going to be development costs and everything associated with that also. But you didn't mention sort of in the green room before we were talking, Noah, about the UTXO snapshot that Alex is working on, which, it's pretty amazing as well. That'd be a great improvement.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Yeah, about 20 minutes, 30 minutes to sync up a full node. And, you know, that's pre-NepoPal. So that should get faster, right? And at that point, you know, your barrier of entry for running a full node just got a hell of a lot lower. And, you know, and one thing, you know, I was in, there's a Telegram channel off topic. I wouldn't recommend it. I was in there because I'm like the social admin, even though I'm kind of not very good at it. There was a couple of characters in there that spun up full nodes on their cell phones and spun up a Mixer instance on their cell phone and spun up a mobile wallet on their cell phone and tied it to their full node that was running on their cell phone. And, you know, that type of infrastructure, a lot of general users don't really care or understand, but, you know, you get better security assumptions. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And that's and if you can make it easy, snapshot nipper powers like you just mentioned as well. So SPV clients and everything's just going to be a lot more faster and it's just exciting.
Yeah, super exciting. That's what I'm most excited for, honestly, for this year is for that those kinds of quality of life improvements to start sort of showing up.
Yeah, ErgoPay was a big step in this last year in terms of the green button, right? Yeah. I think we can green button a lot of things and not lose security. That's a big deal.
Yep. Yeah, that's amazing to think about as well, isn't it? You see people just playing with the product that we have at the moment. Obviously, being able to spin it up on like an Android phone, having like a Linux sort of VM running and having it all running, but having the ability in the near future actually to run up full nodes, having full node security. Once again, sort of going back to that Excel scenario where people don't really have too much hardware infrastructure in regards to cell phone devices, but then also internet access as well. And having them on the ground in Kenya to be able to interact with full node security on a simple mobile device is amazing to have.
No, it creates a trustless environment. That's important for PVP stuff, right? Yeah. And I know a lot of people don't care, but I really don't think they understand the PVP aspect. Like, they're like, oh, it's just a wallet. It kind of works. I can't read code anyway, so why do I care if I can see it? Yeah. And, you know, hopefully they don't have an issue. But if you're looking at it in terms of like a PVP, self-custody, you know, you need to protect yourself, your assets. You know, it's a very different assumption that just many people don't think that way because they come from a system where there's always a third party that acts as, you know, the, insurer of risk. And so I think that doesn't exist in P2P environments. You have to be your own protector.
I think if we could get, bear with me, but Mr. Stahlfelge to add the option of a full node in the mobile wallet, plenty of people would use it.
Yeah, well, let's see. With Nipo Pals, we might get some, you know, instance where you don't lose any security.
Yeah,
I would use it versus a traditional.
I sure would.
Light client. But it's also, I understand the advantages.
Yeah, it's about
not just to myself, but to the network as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I was about to mention. It's just not like a security upgrade in sort of what your app interacting with, say, for instance, whether it's a dApp or ErgoPay, Mosaic, something like that. But also the security that actually improves for the network as a whole. Having an extra pool node running, verifying things like that—that's huge benefit for the network.
Well, there's a big user base that will never even get off exchanges, right?
Yeah,
they'll just buy on an exchange, hold on an exchange, hopefully sell for profit on an exchange. You know, they don't care, and that's okay in my mind. But if we actually want to create, you know, some disruption and some benefits with this technology, it's not going to be just through, you know, leaving your coins on Binance, right?
Yeah. I think the biggest barrier for, or not the biggest, I think user experience is probably the biggest barrier, but a barrier for a lot of people not running a node locally is that it it just makes it harder to interact with a lot of the community dApps and things like that. You know, most of them are built out to be usable with the dApp connector or ErgoPay. And so having the option to use ErgoPay with a full node on your phone, like that would be a huge user experience improvement.
Yep.
And it would open up the ability to interact with all of the dApps and DeFi stuff with a full node in a really easy way. And currently we don't have that.
Yep. Even like obviously being UTXO or extended UTXO, having to do have services off-chain bots and things like that, having the ability to run those on your phone obviously improves both the security of the network, but also the dApp you're interacting with as well, having more services running.
Yeah, I think there's a lot we can green button without you know, losing, let's say, some security assumptions and just enhancing the user experience. That's a good goal for 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say off-chain bots, like that's a pretty wild concept in a way, because every user, you know, can like independently and collectively act as like a P2P order book DEX in theory.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling, isn't it? Especially when you put it like that.
You know, and they're just running their boxes locally and trying to find people to match.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, exciting times ahead. Gentlemen, we're coming up to time, and I think we've sort of spoken at length about sort of what we want to see. Is there any last words, or so can we sum it up?
No, I would just say, you know, I'm going to repeat, you know, whenever you have like this type of financial system, it is PVP, right? And everyone needs to understand that and come in with those assumptions, because not all players are equal, not all systems are fair.
Yeah.
And as well as it's a P2P network, and so through networking and you know, kind of working as a whole, we do build kind of our own economy, and so it's good to be a good peer in that economy.
Yep, very well said. Noah?
I don't have anything else. I'll see you next week.
Well, yeah, we could have a number of topics to talk about, like we discussed in regards to sort of Genesis, Gemini, and things like that, but it'd be interesting to see what happens there. Yeah, it's exciting times for the protocol as a whole. Projects, protocol development, everything like that on the Ergo side of it. Yeah, exciting times ahead, seeing all these projects and frameworks and everything come to light. So, yeah, really looking forward to 2023 and what comes, basically all speculation aside, but seeing everything happening on the development front, the community growth, everything like that. That's what I'm really excited about. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in once again, the first Hash It Out for the year. And Noah, Joe, it's been a pleasure chatting once again.
Have a good one.
Cheers, guys.
See ya.